Hey guys, welcome to the Mo Show podcast presented by Kaft. So just before we kick off, I want to let you know that Kaft recently launched their new app. I'm going to link it in the show notes below. Download it, give it a shot. It'll really help elevate your experience once you're within the district. Enjoy the show.
By any stretch of the imagination, super honored and it's a very surreal moment to introduce Mr. Evan Spiegel, co-founder and CEO of Snapchat. Now, that's a sentence I never thought I'd say. Thank you so much for sparing me some of your time to come on the podcast.
I'm so excited that we could do this. Thank you so much for hosting and really looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. So you've been here 10 years ago and I heard a couple years back and this is maybe your third time in Saudi?
I think so, yeah. Third or fourth.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. In contrast between 10 years ago and today, I think you're the perfect specimen to ask how much has the country changed in your eyes since then?
It's really been extraordinary to see the growth, and the energy here is just infectious. I mean, even we're today opening our new office right here in Jax, and just to look at Jax 2 years ago was totally different than it is today. So to just see the vibrant creativity of the Snapchat community here, and then also just the growth all around the country has been so exciting.
How long into the inception of Snapchat did you say, okay, there's a lot of activity in that country called Saudi Arabia? And we were just talking before we started rolling. I said there is a love affair between Snapchat and Saudis. We used to ask people for their numbers, and now it's like, "Atni Snabak," which means, can I get your Snapchat account? Was it on your radar early days?
It was quite early on that Snapchat began growing here. I think one of the reasons maybe is that I think something like 60% of the population is under 30 years old. Yeah. So there's such a young population here in Saudi willing to try new technology and wanting, I think, what Snapchat has offered, which is a great way to connect with your close friends and family. And so it's always been, I think, a place that's appreciated what Snapchat offers. And it's been so fun to serve the community here.
Yeah, truly. It's something that's just... It's in our DNA, and you know what's great, Evan, is that it grows year on year, you know, and I'm so happy to say no signs of slowing down, and that just it makes me happy, and I think one of the reasons is because of how tech savvy the youth of Saudis are, which is something that, you know, you and your team are probably doubling down on.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that shows up in the creator community that's here, and the way the creators are connecting with their audiences, and then also in augmented reality, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about to see the AR developers building new experiences for Snapchat on the phone, but also thinking about AR for glasses, which is something we're really excited about.
So I just tried that, and I've never had an experience like that before. and it was pretty cool because I saw into the future of where we're going with augmented reality and these goggles, and I could see how much people are going. It's going to be a normal for future consumers, I feel.
I think it's just so powerful to have computing that you can actually share together, grounded in the real world. So much of what we tried to do with Snapchat is make technology more human and more familiar, make it more like talking face to face. But I think with augmented reality, we can take a further step with computing and really integrate it, you know, more effectively into our lives. So it's something that for the first time can be shared instead of just enjoyed on the screen.
That's awesome. I was telling...
I'm going to take my tie off.
Yes, please. Yes,
please.
Sorry, I'll keep the questions light. I was telling one of the guys who work at Snapchat here in Saudi that it's the step before teleportation. If you're drawing something in the air and you're sharing it with someone a million miles away, I mean, the next step is to teleport into his world. And it's just so, it's bizarre. It's cool. I've never seen anything like it. I can't wait for those things to come online. So I looked down on my notes for the first time. You co-founded and became CEO of one of the most popular platforms in the world back in 2011. Launched it into the App Store straight from your dad's living room. Is that true?
It is. Yeah, well, technically it started back in my junior year of college out of my dorm room. It's where we first drew the ghost. But it was called Peekaboo at the time. And then moved back to my dad's house that summer where we launched it as Snapchat. Then finished part of my senior year in school and then ultimately dropped out once we raised money. But I did go back in 2018 to finish.
So. Nice. I like that. Came full circle. Why the name change from Peekaboo, I'm just curiosity, to Snapchat?
a couple of big reasons. One was we got a cease and desist letter from a company called Peekaboo. And I remember my dad's a lawyer. So I went to my dad. I'm like, Dad, we got this cease and desist letter. You know, what should we do? And my dad was like, oh, you could fight it. You know, I'm like, Dad, we have no money. You know what I mean? We don't have a company. You know, we just have a couple friends using this app. Like, we're going to have to change the name. And so, you know, at the time we were thinking about what Snapchat was. And for us, with our friends, we were using it to communicate, to talk. And to talk visually. So we started thinking about, you know, picture talking, picture chatting, and settled on Snapchat.
From what I remember when I signed up 2015 or 16, don't quote me on the date, but it was a good many years ago. I think what stuck out for me the most was the disappearing messages. And I felt that that was what made Snapchat unique right off the bat. Why disappearing messages?
I think disappearing messages make conversations more like face-to-face. You know, when we're out in the world, or even when we pick up the phone to call a friend, those conversations aren't recorded. And that helps people feel more comfortable expressing themselves. And I think when you look at Snapchat and all the decisions we've made, it's really about making sure that people feel comfortable being themselves and expressing themselves in a natural way. Things like opening up to the camera are really important as well, because then you don't miss the moment and it's an invitation to create instead of, you know, just showing a feed of other people's content. So little decisions like that, opening to the camera, of course, you know, ephemeral messaging, a screenshot notification, for example, somebody takes a screenshot. These are the sorts of things that I think can make people feel more comfortable expressing themselves with technology.
Because that came at a time where none of the competitors in the space were doing that. Did you feel that it gave you leverage on some level?
You know, there were a couple folks who were doing it with much more of a sort of security focus. And I think our focus was on self-expression. And so the edge that we had was this focus on self-expression, on visual communication, and of course, you know, opening to the camera as this invitation to share, you know, how you feel. Because at the time, most folks were still using text messaging. And text messages just aren't very expressive. It's hard to know how somebody truly feels when they send you a text. But I think when you receive a snap and you see how somebody feels, you see their face, you understand instantly, you know, what they're trying to share with you. And I think that visual communication is so important.
It is. It's almost easier to communicate with people from afar, definitely is, because of all the tools of expressions that we have on our fingertips. I think friendships can last longer with apps like Snapchat online, and you're not in a position where you lose friends because it's almost like you feel like you're with them in the same room with the tools that you offer.
That's really one of our goals, is to help people strengthen their relationships. And as you pointed out, it's so vital to our well-being, to our mental health. A lot of the research shows that the number one predictor of a positive mental health outcome after you've had a depressive event or something sad has happened is one friendship.
Friendship.
And so if we can help people stay in touch, even just to check in with a friend, that means so much in terms of people's overall well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure a lot of people in Saudi are curious to know why, not just Saudi, but globally, why is the logo of a ghost? Probably terrifies some people. Is there a reason why the ghost is the official mascot of the app?
Well, originally when the app was called Peekaboo, it was Boo like a ghost. And so that inspired the ghost. But it became so, you know, in the early version of the logo, the ghost was holding a little Polaroid, which was fun. And the color yellow was because, you know, we looked at the top 100 apps in the App Store and there weren't any that were yellow. And so we, I think, ended up with a fabulous and distinctive color. And then, of course, a silly ghost that has stayed with us ever since.
Escape competition through authenticity. That phrase comes to mind. Just like any startup, I'm sure, Evan, there were crazy hiccups along the way. Is there one that stays with you till today, or a challenge that maybe you didn't think you'd overcome at the time, but you did? Does one stay with you?
There are a couple big ones. I think one of the challenges was that in many ways, Snapchat was late as a smartphone app. So if you think about it, whether it was Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all these apps came before Snapchat, and they all had a chance to grow their audience before Snapchat was ever invented. And we really, you know, created Snapchat because we wanted something different that wasn't social media, that didn't have the permanence and the public likes and comments and all those sorts of things, but was really a way for people to stay close with their friends and family. The fact that there were these other big competitors out there was a real challenge. It was a challenge in terms of raising money. I can remember early investors we spoke to saying, you know, wow, that's just a little too close to some of these really big competitors. And of course, I think Snapchat was also misunderstood because people were so used to traditional social media that it was hard to understand why people might be interested in visual messaging. So I think that those big competitors were certainly a challenge for us. I remember one early Christmas. This was around the time that Meta or Facebook at the time launched their first real copycat. It was called Poke. And it came out in the App Store, and there was four of us working in my dad's house at that time, and we were like, oh no, you know, what's gonna happen? And miraculously that Christmas, as everyone got their first iPhones, Snapchat rose to the top of the app charts. And it was such an incredible feeling, because we were so concerned. They'd put this banner at the top of Facebook telling everyone to download Poke, and yet, you know, Christmas morning, Snapchat had climbed to the top of the charts. And I think, you know, we very early on found that when people imitate our service, it actually builds awareness for Snapchat overall. And that actually ended up being a driver of our growth in those early days.
The saying, you get paid for being right first, comes to mind. You know, no matter how many people are out there copying you, it all eventually comes around to you and boosts what you do. Like an elevator pitch of what Snapchat does will be a tough sell. So I have this app, and you know, you send a picture, but then it disappears. Do you want to invest? You know, and I use that analogy a lot with people when I tell them that, you know, just because people don't see your idea, it doesn't mean that you should die on your dreams.
I was out there making that pitch. I actually had flyers, and on the you may be familiar with the Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And I would go out there on the promenade and say, "Do you want to send disappearing photos?" And people are like, "No, absolutely not." But that was one of the things that helped us understand the importance of focusing on visual messaging. Because when we told people that they could send a photo 10 times faster than MMS, you know, at the time, sending a photo via text took minutes. You know, it took forever to upload. When people saw how quickly they could send images back and forth, that's when Snapchat really started to take off. Yeah.
Did you ever think that it would become as big as it is today?
Never. There's no chance.
Not in your wildest dreams.
Never. Our goal was really just to have something that our friends would use, because Bobby and I had worked on something called Future Freshman prior to working on Snapchat. And it was a very complicated web app that was designed to help people apply to college. And we were so excited about it. We worked on it for maybe 18 months, 2 years, 24/7. We thought this was going to be big. And when we released it, nobody used it, not even our siblings who were applying to college at the time. My mom signed up, which was nice. But other than that, no one used our service. And so it was such an interesting moment for us, where we realized we wanted to build something that people would use. And so just having a couple of our friends use it in the early days was really exciting for us.
How do you go through regions and countries to see where you want to invest in? Are there certain metrics that you look for?
A lot of what we look for is just early organic adoption. So people who are already finding and loving the service, using it together with their friends. And then typically, you know, we get to some sort of tipping point, maybe 10 or 15% of the country starts using the service. And that's really time for us to dig in and help support the growth. Of course, you know, work with creators in the country to help them succeed on Snapchat and to overall just accelerate the organic growth that's happening. So I think it's really an organic-led strategy. And then we do everything we can to help support the development of the community.
And launching, you're obviously here to inaugurate the new Snapchat office in Riyadh. What does the future for Snapchat in Saudi look like to you? Are you bullish, hence the inauguration of the office?
I'm just so excited to be able to continue supporting our community here. To reach 25 million people in Saudi is just incredible. And there's so much creativity here. One of the things that we've been really excited to see is just the authentic connections that creators are able to build with their audience here. I think talking to folks who use Snapchat and Saudi, they feel like creators are their friend because they get an authentic view into their lives. And I think that's just so valuable. So to have this Majlis Snap space and be able to support creators through training, to help them work together with brands to better monetize, these are the sorts of things that we're really excited about expanding upon with this new space.
What's interesting about the whole monetization aspect of Snapchat is that you're actually taking stuff off creators as plates. So instead of them going to look for brands to work with, it's a one-stop shop on Snapchat.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that's been really well embraced by our community is revenue share. So we share revenue together with creators. And so as they're, you know, building value for their audience and for Snap, they're also able to earn money. And I think that's a really important part of giving back to the ecosystem, so the creators can invest in building their own businesses or building their own brands. And that's something that we're really excited.
With so many content creators in Saudi, Majlis Snap sounds like a great idea. How will that create space that supports creators?
Well, we're really excited about being able to offer training for new creators to help them, you know, learn how to best connect with the audience here in Saudi. Of course, we're excited longer term to help AR developers as well and AR creators learn how to use our tools like Lens Studio to build AR experiences. That's something that I think is going to be really exciting to build upon. And then, of course, as I mentioned, really bringing it all together with our advertising partners and clients here who want to be able to collaborate together with creators and, you know, ultimately build, you know, bigger businesses and, of course, help creators find even more success.
It's potential to create a breeding ground here for those who, you know, weren't 100% sure of whether they want to be future creators. But now that the opportunity is there, we're almost like, you know, Snapchat can take your hand and show you how it's done. And all of a sudden, you know, you can be a future creator slash influencer.
Yeah, our belief is that everyone is creative. And sometimes, you know, as we get older, for example, that creativity can be suppressed by fear, or sometimes we don't have the tools to express that creativity. So much of what we do with Snapchat and how we try to evolve our camera and our augmented reality tools is to just make it easier to unleash the creativity that's inside all of us.
Augmented reality, I just threw on those glasses and it took me into another world. Any idea when that product could potentially be sold?
I think certainly before the end of the decade, it'll be widely available to consumers. Right now, it's available, you know, spectacles.com for creators. So people who want to build with our glasses, because our view is that we really need to seed the ecosystem with these lens experiences so that when consumers are ready to buy AR glasses and try them, that there's all sorts of fun and amazing stuff to do. And I think sometimes with new computing platforms, there's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem where there's some new device, but there aren't a lot of apps or experiences for people to have when they buy it. And I think that can be disappointing as a consumer. So for us, it's really about seeding the ecosystem, working together with developers so they can learn how to build for SnapOS. And then in the future, you know, release a consumer pair of glasses, you know, powered by all these amazing experiences that developers create.
Do you see it coexisting with Snapchat as we know it on your phone? So it's not an either or for those new to this, like myself. They can clearly coexist in the ecosystem.
Absolutely. I think actually one of the benefits of glasses is that you can use your phone at the same time. One of the challenges with VR headsets is that you can't, you know, see the world around you. You can't use your phone. You can't see, you know, your friends. And so I really believe that see-through glasses are going to be such an important way to engage with computing. And it doesn't preclude your ability to use other pieces of technology or, you know, go for a walk outside without bumping into things.
Yeah. That's going to do well in Saudi, by the way. But I have to ask, I mean, you know, you've achieved your dreams, surpassed it. What's next for you besides the spectacles?
Well, we're definitely very invested in spectacles. But I think for me personally, I'm just excited about the opportunity to give back. I mean, that's been the best part of building our business. And I think, you know, our families engage in things like affordable housing, for example, or even some of these longer term kind of big ideas in America. One of the challenges we face in America is that we tend to invest over relatively short time horizons. Our government's budget window is 10 years. And so as we're evaluating making long-term investments, sometimes really profitable or high return long-term investments don't look very good over a 10-year period of time, but they look great over 30 years or 50 years. I mean, think about any investment in young people, right? Investment in education or healthcare and housing for young people. Those are investments that are incredibly positive over a longer period of time, but over a 10-year period of time look terrible. And so we're very interested in trying to support ways to change how the government in the United States invests to consider these longer term returns.
That's amazing. Very philanthropic, if that's I'm pronouncing it correctly, of you to touch people's lives in a way that can benefit them the most. And what better than affordable housing? How do you blow off steam? How do you relax? What do you do for fun?
Chase our four kids around. We got four boys at home, which is nonstop action.
Work cut out for you.
That's I think probably my favorite thing to do. And we just finished the seventh Harry Potter book. So,
oh, wow.
We're thinking about kind of the next series here. I think it's going to be Chronicles of Narnia.
Good choice.
That's what we're thinking. And then, you know, just personally, like I'm a pilot. So, you know, started maybe 10 years ago flying helicopters and now into fixed wing and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's a fun way to relax.
How often do you try to fly?
If it's a good week, I can get out once, you know, on the weekend, maybe Saturday or something like that. You know, with the kiddos and trying to manage everything at home, our youngest is just 8 or 9 months now. So it's still hands on.
Congratulations on that. A bit of advice for future Saudi entrepreneurs, maybe specifically, let's say, future entrepreneurs into the tech world. Entrepreneurs in general, what advice do you have for up-and-coming Saudis who want to enter that space?
think one of the most important things and some of the best advice that I ever received was to stay focused, to get really good at saying no. And I think that's so important when you're just starting something because you have such limited resources and it's just vital that you focus on your customer. But yet there are so many distractions, right? People that, you know, want to do partnerships or want to invite you to some event or something like that. And I think for entrepreneurs that can stay focused on their customers and say no to everything else, that's really at the heart of building a business because you've got to make something that customers love. So I think that's really important. One of the other great pieces of advice I got when I was younger was you have two ears and one mouth, use them in that proportion. And I think listening is just critical. Of course, for learning about, you know, when we started our business, I had no idea how to do just about anything. I never run a company before, but I was able to listen and learn from a lot of different entrepreneurs and folks who had great advice for me. So I think just, you know, staying in that listening mode is really valuable as well.
Great advice. I love that. I use that a lot with my 7-year-old, two ears and one mouth. If you, and I'll close with this, I stole this from Tim Ferriss. If you had the attention of the world for 60 seconds and everyone on the planet had Snapchat, when they opened it, they're going to see a message that you wrote for 60 seconds. So basically your message to the world. He uses the analogy of a billboard for everyone to see. Take your time if you need to.
I think I would just reflect on how short our lives are in this grand, incredible universe that's, you know, existed for billions of years. And to have this tiny little flash of a moment on Earth is just extraordinary. And that, you know, if we can all just, I think, acknowledge that the only moment we're guaranteed is this present moment, and that the only life we have is this tiny, tiny little flash in all of history, that if we can live that way and figure out how we can best support one another, support the Earth, make a positive impact in this little moment that we're here, I think that for me, I think could is the message I would share.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not to end on a downer, we'll find a way to bring it up again. But it was Kobe Bryant, God rest his soul, who said we have less time than we think. And if that doesn't make you move and make something of your life, I don't know what will. You know, nothing else will move you.
It's so crazy you brought up Kobe. I love Kobe so much. And actually, he was one of the first people to come visit our office down in Venice Beach. And it's a hilarious story because we had this small little office. It was called the Blue House down on Venice Beach. And Kobe was like, oh, I want to come by. It's great. You know, come on by. And he managed to, you know, Venice Beach is one of the most popular destinations like in California. So there's more than 10 million people visiting a year and the boardwalk is packed. So for Kobe to sneak into our little office on the boardwalk was tough, but he did it. So he makes it into the office, no problem. Nobody recognized him. We had a great, you know, chat. He got to meet the team and hang out. But then as he's leaving, one of our team members, he walks out the door, he's going down the steps and she's like, wait, because she wanted to get an autograph. And everyone looks, and there's Kobe, and then it was just like, boom, like the whole, everyone on Venice Beach saw him and was just so excited to see him there.
And I was like, how do we get him home safely?
Yeah, it's like, oh, no. But what an incredible athlete and entrepreneur. I think Oscar winner.
That is insane.
Well. I got sort of, I would always randomly get sat next to him at these dinners in L.A., and it's just,
you're a lucky guy.
It's so nice to spend time.
Yeah, amazing. What an amazing story, Matt. A bit of finish the sentences for you, Mr. Evan, before we get out of your hair. I feel most alive when?
Ooh.
Watching Kobe.
I feel most alive when I'm with my family. That.
The thing I value most in life today is?
I really value the opportunity to learn. That's my absolute favorite thing to do.
So you're a lifelong learner?
Yeah, and I'm just, today I spent an hour with ChatGPT, like learning about the Islamic Golden Age and actually the fact that a lot of Greek philosophy and, you know, science and this sort of stuff was preserved by, essentially by Arabic translation and then ultimately got retranslated back into Latin over in Spain. And without that sort of effort to save a lot of these Greek philosophical writings and things like that, a lot of the ideas that ultimately ended up being adopted by the founding fathers in America, like that never would have happened. So it's just so interesting the way that this region and, you know, especially this period of time, this Islamic golden era, like what an important role that played in actually the creation of the United States. And I knew nothing about it this morning. And now I'm like, just I just want to, you know, as soon as this conversation's over,
continue
my learning journey. It's been really fun.
That should be taught in school, I feel.
We definitely didn't get that far in my in my school.
But that's like, I mean, a bit of important history, I think, that should be common knowledge.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I just had no idea that, I mean, so many of these Greek writings were just totally lost, essentially, mm-hmm. You know, somewhat adopted by the Romans, but then kind of lost after that. But thankfully, you know, these Arabic translations, and of course, were actually built on and expanded upon, you know, by so many Arabic philosophers and writers and scientists. And so that's just something I had no idea that had happened until today. So
that's great. It's a rich rich history in this part of the world, maybe richer than some people give us credit for. But are you much of a reader? Do you have any favorite books?
I love to read. One of the I'm reading right now, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. It's a fun one, short also, which is great. Let's see, what else have I been reading lately? A lot of Harry Potter, as I mentioned. We've been flying through those.
The subject of meditation, do you meditate? Are you a frequent meditator?
I love to meditate. I found Kriya Yoga, which is sort of like a combination of meditation, but really with breathing exercises, maybe 5 years ago or something like that. And it was life-changing for me because up until then, I couldn't find meditation that worked for me. I didn't even understand. I was like, why do people like meditating? It's just like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm still there.
Yeah. Can you try Kriya? It's unbelievable. And Kriya for me is so energizing and stimulating and
Kriya. I will look into it. Every year I say this will be the year I meditate. And I never do.
This could be the year.
So yeah. Would you do it in the morning, in the evenings?
I try to do it in the morning if I can.
Get it up.
I like to get up early. Yeah, yeah. But it's tough. I usually have to pick between exercise or meditate. So it's usually one of the two.
How early are you waking up? Are you a morning person?
Yeah, I love to get up early. 5 o'clock is kind of my sweet spot.
So the only place in the world I wake up at 5 a.m. is in California because I'm jet lagged. but that's when I'm happiest because, I mean, there's nothing like waking up with the sunrise.
So nice.
We were built for that, right?
I mean, it just feels great. And it's quiet in the morning. At least I get 30 minutes before our kids are up and everything's rocking and rolling.
Yeah. By 9 p.m., you can't keep your eyes open. You need to go back to California. I wish I knew this when I was younger.
I wish I knew everything's going to be okay. You know, I think when I was younger, I was worried what was going to happen when I grew up. How was I going to be able to, you know, support my family? My dad, when I was growing up, would be like, don't get used to this. You know what I mean? I was very fortunate to grow up pretty spoiled in Los Angeles. And my dad would be like, you know, don't get used to this. It's really hard, you know, to be able to support yourself in this way. And my parents would talk about things in terms of like the hours it would take to earn that at minimum wage. And so everything, like a new pair of jeans, my parents would be like, you know, at minimum wage, that's 5 hours, you know, to just give that perspective to me growing up. And so I often thought about like, how was I going to support myself? What was I going to do? And I was very into art and design, and there wasn't a super obvious career path for me. You know, I was very passionate about graphic design. So that was something I was interested in doing. And I really just was so fortunate to find product design and to be able to apply sort of that design thinking ultimately to Snapchat and to, you know, making new product.
If it wasn't Snapchat, what would it have been? If you didn't fall into the world of Snapchat, where do you think you would have been at the age you are today?
I was really into biotech at the time. Actually, in high school, my first paying job was an internship at a company called at the time called Abraxas Bioscience. This was back when like GPUs were very new and people were starting to use them for modeling, for early stage drug discovery and these sorts of things. And I was really excited about the intersection of computing and medicine. And so I think ultimately, I don't know if I could have gotten through enough chemistry to get to medical school, but I think probably something with computing and medicine, just because I think there's so much opportunity there.
Yeah. What do you want to be remembered for when it's all said and done?
That's an easy, great dad. That's an easy one.
That's just the, I mean, that's so wholesome. Because, you know, I mean, many people would probably expect that you know, you want Snapchat to be the best app ever known or something philanthropic. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that word right. But to bring it close to home and say just great dad is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Well, it's funny, in this, you know, Marcus Aurelius basically writes a lot actually about, you know, kind of how frivolous it is to try to chase fame, because he's like, well, even if somebody remembers you in the next generation, like, they're going to die anyways. Why are you so, you know, why are people so worried about being famous? And instead, you know, think about kind of some of these like core values and how you, you know, show up in your family and in your life. So, yeah, I mean, I think for me, I was so fortunate to have, you know, parents who worked so hard to provide for me and, you know, make a positive impact in my life. And I hope our kids, you know, feel the same way about me.
I think it's important to be remembered by the people who are closest to you.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, at the same time, it's important to make a positive impact. It's important to do things, I think, like that hopefully move the world forward in a positive direction. But ultimately, our kids are, I think our kids are gonna matter.
Yeah, that's who we live for. We'll end with this one. Is there anything missing in your life today?
Time. Never enough time. Yeah.
Are you good with disciplining your time, being forensic with how much time you allocate to what you do?
I do. I try to, yeah. But then ultimately, I don't know if this happens to you. Like, I just get interested in something, or I want to help on a new project or explore a new idea. And I you know, I think that's why I always feel like there's not enough time, especially, you know. This, you know, as I mentioned, I love learning stuff. There's just never enough time to explore and learn more about this incredible world we live in.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, honestly. Enjoy the next 12 hours or so that you have in Saudi, and try to visit us on an annual basis, please. We'd love to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. Much appreciated. Thank you.